You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. It is 9 minutes after nine on the West Coast. Joining me from the East Coast, Florida, I believe, unless he's traveling, is Mike Etor. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mac. I'm fine, and I am in Lithia, Florida.
Where?
Yeah, I knew you would say that. There is actually no town named Lithia. There's not an actual town, but my mailing address is Lithia, L-I-T-H-I-A, and it's a zip code, essentially. So I tell people I live in Tampa, but it's really Spotsylvania compared to Quantico or D.C.
Wow. Now, just so everybody knows, from Spotsylvania, you can see the edge of the universe, just so you know. So there you have it. So, wow, the Florida equivalent of Spotsylvania. That's interesting. Now, Spotsylvania may have changed over the course of the years, though. I've heard it's now closer to the kingdom than it used to be.
I moved there when I was at the basic school. I moved there at Quantico in 92, and I lived there was a back path from my neighborhood to the Spotsylvania battlefield. And it was truly on the edge. And even as I was leaving the area in 98, I had gotten quite built up. So I imagine now that the creep has even extended further. But when I was there, on a quiet night, if the winds were right, you could hear banjos playing, you know.
Banjos?
Yeah, Deliverance. Yeah, come on, man.
I didn't know if you were referring to ghosts, right? Ghosts
no.
on the battlefield?
No.
Or?
Yep. Making a little Deliverance hillbilly reference. I'm not going to have to drive this show, am I?
You know what? I think you just did a little bit. But that's all right. It happens every once in a blue moon. It does happen when I'm not picking up as quick as I can. Now, let's talk about the Battle of Spotsylvania for 1 second. What do you find to be the most interesting aspect of the Battle of Spotsylvania?
You know, I'm not well versed in the actual battle. I read some on it. I'm not a big Civil War buff. But what really surprised me was when walking through, I have walked through it fairly. I used to run through there. And how small it actually was. And you look at some of the battlefield, the open areas they preserved, and you realize how many people were crammed into that relatively small space. And then you got those cannons up on a little bit of high ground, and you just realize, my God, the human toll. These guys just had to know they were going to die, you know?
All right. Well, let me just tell you what has always stuck with me about the Battle of Spotsylvania. A guy named Emory Upton, right? He is one of the first people to use what's known at the time as open order tactics. So in the Civil War, one of the most things that you see, and one of the reasons for there's such incredible carnage, is weapons have made this quantum leap forward with this thing called rifling. But we're still using close order tactics, and so people are stacked up, and they're lucrative targets, and not only for rifles but for artillery, and the casualties are what they are. And then Upton says, hey, man, why don't we spread out and make it harder? And he leads an attack at Spotsylvania where that becomes prominent. So Upton at Spotsylvania. So how about that?
That's an awesome tidbit, and it's a shame that more people didn't study that, more commanders didn't study that going into World War One. Obviously, where you know as well as I do, they were still basically using those linear tactics against something called the machine gun.
Yeah.
Which just, I mean, what are you thinking, you know?
Yeah, you know what? I've been reading this movie, 1917, evidently it's a cross between a movie and a video game, you know, in terms of animated effects. And but every review I've seen of it said it's that it's an outstanding movie. So I'm kind of curious to go see it. But I don't know. So anyway. All right, what we're here to do today is to do kind of the first installment of discussions about Marine Corps leadership and how it translates to business. And so Mike's written a book called Trust-Based Leadership, and if you haven't got it, you can get it on Amazon, or you can send me an email that I'll forward to Mike, and Mike will send you a copy. But it's called Trust-Based Leadership, Marine Corps Leadership Concepts for Today's Business Leaders. So what I hope to do with this series is to get people interested in this whole notion of A, military leadership and how it translates. And so before I ask you the first question there, Etor, give me your thoughts on this 10-part series that we'll do.
Sure. Well, we obviously spoke about it briefly last week. And as I understand it, we're going to do 10 sessions. The audience is your primary audience of mostly veterans, some active duty, some retired, some in the transition at various stages. And the intent is, after each episode, listeners will gain hopefully an increasing awareness and associated confidence in the fact that what they learned in the Marine Corps or any service for that matter, but you know we're Marine centric here, they really have learned, observed, executed, has been associated with some very, very high caliber leadership and organizational skills, techniques, concepts, and all of that. And it really does apply. And so I will up front say that I'm speaking at the Naval Academy next month, and it's a mixed audience of about 400 midshipmen and about another 400 students from civilian universities. I think military, like Citadel, VMI, and people like that will be there, but there will be Ivies there and other colleges from around the country that'll send one or two, you know, students there. And, you know, to frame this kind of series, part series, in fact, I will just tell you this. I'll be staring at the fresh faces of those midshipmen. And the class of 2020 that's about to graduate, Navy and Marine, you know, second lieutenants and ensigns. And then you look at the college kids. 6 years from now, in 2026, the amount of leadership experience, even as junior officers, it's just 6 years later, the gulf between them and the vast majority of their civilian peers is almost unimaginable or unbelievable by some. And that doesn't mean there's not some shit hots, so to speak, civilians, because there are. And it doesn't mean that we don't have some bad, you know, ensigns and lieutenants and captains and JGs and all of that, because we do. But if you take that thought and transfer it to the 4-year Lance Corporal, the 6-year Corporal, the guy that just does one enlistment, two enlistments, or the career Marine, you are in some ways so far ahead of your peer group or your competitor group that I hope to, you know, to provide some personal experiences and observations throughout this series to, if I can get one person to believe this, because I'm not embellishing it, I'm not blowing smoke, I really believe that the veteran, the transitioning veteran, whether it's a 1, 2, or 2 enlistment or 30 years, those guys are a national asset that is largely being wasted. And it's largely being wasted because that asset, those soldiers and Marines and airmen themselves are not stepping forward. They're not getting out of their comfort zone and getting into the sieve dib, so to speak, with vigor. And so I find that, and I'm telling you, my personal experience, Mac, is from general officer on down to one enlisted Marine. I've routinely seen people sell themselves short, and I try to tell them, no, step out there. There's people dying to know you, dying, you'll fit right in. You're going to have to adapt, but you just got to get a foot in the door. And it's almost like someone reaches into their skull and clicks the confidence button to off. And I'm determined to reach inside with non-invasive surgery, so to speak, and flip that switch back on for him.
Where does that come from? Because I think everybody hears it. Hey, you need to be really careful. Veterans scare them. So you hear all these different things about the business world as you don't talk about your combat experiences, any detail. If you're a grunt, don't go there with anybody. Right? You hear all these things, which get you back on your heels, right? I'm going into this world that I haven't participated in a while. And so is that where it starts? It makes us a little bit leery of doing it. And go ahead.
Yeah, you know, let me ramble a little bit on this one. Yes, I do. Again, I put most of the blame on us, ourselves, because we don't sell ourselves well. Now, that said, and I'm not speaking about anybody specifically, but I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. It's my primary social media tool to attract the following and gain clients and things like that. And my advice to all transitioning veterans, careerists and long-term guys, is buyer beware. The good news is there are so many resources out there now for transitioning military guys getting out.
Right.
That didn't exist when I retired in 98. And when I retired in 98, the internet wasn't there. You know, like not, you know, you, it was rare, but there was no websites like today. And so the good news is there's all sorts of resources out there. The bad news is I routinely see people posturing themselves on LinkedIn and the web as, I'm doing air quotes here, transition experts. And then I look in their bio, and it's like, well, this guy just retired, and God bless him, thanks for his service and all that, but this guy has never had a civilian job. And he's trying to tell people, here's what you got to do, here's what you don't got to do. Now, let me caveat this, Matt. Some of them are more, hey, I'm a resume expert. I'm a benefits expert. I help with you with the mechanics, the administrative part of the transition. And those guys are doing good work. But I kind of, you know, jacked up a person a couple months ago. This was a female, and she was kind of new, and her byline was that she was a transition expert. And I got to tell you, she was given advice that was flat out wrong. It was just flat out wrong. And I answered her and said, hey, I disagree. What you're telling people about gaps on their resumes, that was legit for my dad's generation. But this has been gone since the early 90s. She was basically saying, if you had more than two or three jobs on your resume during a 10-year period or 20-year period, you look like a job hopper and you couldn't keep a job. And I'm like, no, that's not true. That's absolutely not true. It is absolutely, first of all, there's no pensions anymore at most companies. The 401k got invented. And what I'm about to tell people is if you desire to be an executive or you just desire to max out your earnings potential, it is absolutely expected that you're going to get your foot in the door, even as a young Lance Corporal transitioning out, you know, work at an auto dealer or whatever, and when the time comes, they're either going to promote you and pay more money, or you're going to go to the guy down the street and work there. And over the next 10 or 15 years, you may zigzag back and forth through three or five companies, all the while increasing in role and scope of duties and compensation. That's how it is today. But this woman who is charging people for her advice, and they don't know not to listen to her.
Right.
She was telling them, don't do that. You'll be scorned and looked at as a loser, blah, blah, blah. And I wrote a lengthy response to her that people were liking quite a bit. You know, they put the like button on it, and she did not respond. She did not respond. And it was not a personal attack. It was basically me. This one was so egregious, I had to respond. So take that example. I see it every day. I see it every day, people giving advice they're not qualified to give. So if they recalled me to active duty, Mac, and said, Mike, you are a regimental commander. Okay, let's go. Two up and one back. I got it. Well, you know what? I don't have it. I can still lead Marines. I think I could do that almost instantly, the rapport with Marines and all that. Now, when it comes to weapon systems, intelligence, communication assets that we have, I'm so far in the dark that it's not even over the horizon. It's around the next planet, you know? So I'm unqualified to give tactical advice associated with modern technology and weapon systems because I'm not conversant in it. So my point is, and I'll get off the soapbox, veterans, you need to listen to people, but you need to make sure they're qualified to give you advice because there's a lot of untutored people out here and there's a lot of naysayers out here. And because you're not used to being a customer of some of these things, unfortunately, a lot of them are all aimed at getting you to pay them for advice on how to do things that they themselves have never done. So that's my stump speech on transition experts.
I want to come back to that.
Okay.
But I want to ask you a basic question, right? So I want to ask you the question, does military leadership translate? But before I ask you that question, I've got to ask you a precursor to that question. What is military leadership? Right? We throw this term out there. Military leadership, right? Do your military leadership skills matter, count, translate, blah, blah, blah? What is this thing we call military leadership?
Got it. This is just my detour's opinion. I think one of my seminars, I actually found this stat. If you go on the web, Mac, I should have pulled that slide up. I wanted to say there were like 5,000 or 7,000 definitions of leadership on the internet.
Wow.
And most of them were like, yeah, I could buy that. That's pretty good, you know? And so the bottom line is, Mike Etor says, leadership is the art of employing science and technique to align people's efforts to produce desired outcomes. Now, if you ask me to repeat that, I can't because I just kind of paraphrase that off of my experience.
Okay,
you know?
I won't ask you to repeat it. What makes that, what you described to me, was no different in the military than it would be for anybody leading anything?
Bingo. That with one caveat, the standards for being a military leader are higher, the vetting process is higher. The requirements for integrity and special trust and confidence are higher in the sense of accountability if you don't have them, or all we got to do is look out in the civilian world and politics and all that. We see people doing outrageous stuff. They're not getting fired. If you're a corporal and you lie to me, I'm firing you that day. And you're not going to reenlist in all of that. The big difference between military leadership and business leadership is the very real possibility that you're going to have to lead in combat and that your decisions could actually cause people to be killed or maimed. That's the real difference. There are some, industrial construction jobs where the physical danger part of it is also associated with leadership, making sure that your crew is doing things in a safe manner and all that. If you take those aside and put them off to the side, you know, when I worked in the pure executive world, I mean, there's no, I mean, the real danger is, you know, is the lunch caterer going to show up on Friday, you know? There's no physical danger whatsoever, but the leadership is the same. So, yes, as I see it, the only real difference between military leadership and civilian leadership is we have our own set of rules, our own set of characteristics and traits, our own vetting processes, and you throw that combat thing in there, which kind of justifies everything else I just said. You know, the increased, you know, the kids I'm going to be talking to next month at the academy, I want them all to have integrity, to have, you know, be unselfish and blah, 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 special trust and confidence. I want all that audience to have that. But I insist that those staring at me wearing a uniform have it. I insist upon it, and so does our nation.
Okay, so let's talk about that. So the possible consequence that you will cause somebody else's death, right, or that somebody else will die carrying out that which you instructed, what is the implication? What is the implication of that, Mike, for military leadership?
As I saw it, the implication is that you must be a student of the profession, a lifelong learner, and that you have to understand that, you know, as a rifle platoon commander in the Grenada and Beirut operations, which, you know, are not going to go down in history as, you know, Iwo Jima or Hawaii City or Fallujah. But the bottom line is those young Marines and even not so young Marines that I was in charge of, they were looking at me for answers and guidance. And if I told them go left, they went left. If I told them hold up, in other words, I was the one making the call. And, so you have to, you know, I don't, you know, Mattis, so I got the call early. Mattis didn't get the call until he was a lieutenant colonel. So, but he studied, he did all, he got, so the message to the military guys still in is, or about to be in, is I don't know when the flag is going up for you. I don't know if it's ever going up for you, but when it goes, you damn well better be ready because it's too late to study. And the combat genie is not going to come and tap you and your unit on their heads and say, be combat ready. You know, there's no wishful thinking at that point. So that's a great question, Mac. And I will say, maybe this will steal some of your thunder, but the next question is, I observed in the Marine Corps that without a doubt, the very best leaders, and I talk about very best not on a given day. On a given day, anybody can be Navy cross-level hero. I'm talking about the guy that is a sustained superior results as a leader over the long haul, years. The common denominator is you take this guy or gal and you put him or her in front of a unit. And it doesn't matter how they were yesterday, today, within a week, something's changed. Just something has changed. They're no longer the bottom feeders of the battalion or the regiment or the division. And those people were always lifelong learners, students of the profession. And what I have found in the business world, the exact same thing. The exact same thing. And in fact, out here, what we call PME, professional military education, is not even an afterthought out here. The vast majority of companies don't do it. The vast majority of these young kids I'll be talking to next month, they don't get taught that. They're not raised in that. There's no commandant's reading list in their company. And so they don't know. But out here, same thing applies, Matt. The people that I see, accelerating rapidly ahead of their peers, getting the big roles. And out here, the big roles mean take money, are typically the students of their profession, the lifelong learners. So that's everything that I keep saying, they're going to get tired of hearing it over these 10 sessions. There's almost a 1-to-1 ratio of alignment between the Marine Corps leadership, situational leadership, and in the business world.
All right, I want to talk about that, because what I heard you say was essentially, because of the life and death consequence that's possibly associated with military leadership, the intensity of that experience contributes to an advanced understanding relative to those that would be of similar age in the business world. And that's,
yes.
And that would be the benefit of learning leadership in the military.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, yes. So you're spot on. And I will tell you, let's just erase the combat quotient for now. The young lieutenant that, let's just say infantry lieutenant, the young infantry lieutenant that gets out after 4 years and two pumps, Okinawa pumps, new pumps, not combat. That guy he's been the armory officer. He's been an investigating officer. He has led live fires. He's been the range OIC, the safety officer, all of this. He's planned training. He's led the unit during night marches. You know, he's been the guy with the compass and all of that. So that combat, just those reps, that set of events, responsibilities that he's had, typically greatly exceed that of his 27-year-old peer in the business world, because not only is the learning curve far steeper out in the business world for leadership, that means that the trust curve is far steeper. And so I find that most people pick up their first fire team, so to speak, in the business world in their late 20s at the earliest. At the earliest. Let me give you an example, then I'll let you talk, Mac. When I was with K-Force, after a few years, people at K-Force said, Mike, how many people do you have in your organization? Like, not direct reports, but like, how many people are in your direct? And I said, just shy of 300. And they said, whoa, man, oh my God, that is a lot. And then I would talk to my Marine buddy, and they'd say, Mike, how many people are in your group? You know, and I'd say, just shy of 300. And they'd say, shit. It was two completely different responses to the same answer. So the civilians thought having 300 people that you were ultimately responsible for and all those departments and projects and all of that, that was daunting to most of them. And I'm not making fun of them. They just, this is not this what they've been exposed to. Whereas the Marines said, thank you. You're 45 years old. If you were still running, you would have had a battalion. You would have had over 1,000, you know. So it's all, you know, it's all relevant to what the expectations are in the environment.
Interesting. I was having a conversation with my number two son, Patrick, who has your book, and we were talking about, you know, the transference of leadership, and he says what a lot of guys said. You know, Patrick grew up in the shadow of Iraq and Afghanistan, but when he joined the Marine Corps, I mean, those obligations were winding down, right? And so he's a member of 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, and they're doing the 31st MU and UDP and whatnot, and you know, so it's like that lament of I wish I could have. And I said, yeah, but you know, and the 31st MU had an Osprey go on the, you know, crash during his deployment, and that experience for the Marines of that battalion, is acute, right? I said the courage of when the next time everybody gets on the Ospreys, right, that the officers and staff NCOs lead those sticks onto those aircraft, because it's not like everybody's got the same thought in their head, you know, please God, don't let it be me. I said the courage is no different, though, right? And as you said, the courage to, when you're at 29 Palms and it's your squad that's supposed to close on an obstacle that's being fired on, you know, by another unit with, you know, cruiser weapons, with heavy machine guns and medium machine guns, right? You can hear the ricochets going. They sound like they're going right past you, right?
Oh, yeah.
The courage it takes to say, let's go, boys, and hop out of whatever cover you're in, right? The courage to move vehicles at night in the desert with all that goes with it and with all the danger that goes with it, especially with young people, it's the same courage. And so, you know, it's really interesting. I don't think most people in the Marine Corps and in the military in general look at their experiences like that with the intensity that they do it and say, I've been on an accelerated leadership program. Would you say that's valid, Mike, that statement, that they don't realize the intensity and the byproduct, the benefits of the intensity and how much further they are down the road relative to being a leader?
Yes, I totally agree with that. In fact, I'm going to steal that statement, the Accelerator Leadership Program. My events that I hold, I call it the Fidelis Leadership Accelerator.
There you go.
And I tell people, if you listen to me and read and all this, I can accelerate your learning about leadership. So you flip that back to what you're just saying. Yes, Lance Corporal, First Lieutenant, Captain. I'm talking to the younger guys now. You absolutely have been on an accelerated degree program, so to speak, when it comes to leadership, organizational skills, interpersonal skills, politics in the workplace, sexual harassment type stuff. You've been on an accelerated course and at least observing it, and in most cases being an active participant in it. And so, there's no doubt about it. And again, I am a fan. I love working with the 28-year-old civilian who's never had any leadership training whatsoever. But if the fact remains that the guy coming out of the military, the six-year Lance Corporal, if he's good, if he's smart, if he can adapt, if he can write legibly, if he's, you know, if he's just a good individual, he is light years ahead organizational skills and leadership-wise than the college graduate who's been in the business world 4 or 5 years. Now, the Lance Corporal may not know accounting. He may not know the technical issues of the college grad's job and all of that. And so that should be noted. But when it comes to leadership, that college graduate has never been in charge of a field day. He has never been in charge of, all right, we're having a live fire. We have to have 2 means of communication, with range control. We've got to have the corpsman, the ammo guy's got to make sure that the mortar rounds are stacked in this little revetment. They've never done any of that. And so, yes, I know where you're going, Mac, and we both need to bang into these guys' heads. You know more than you ever think you do, and you've learned more and are capable of much more in the civilian world right from the start, as long as you learn the op terms and symbols of the business world. They speak a different language. If I take some of these civilians and throw them inside a rifle company, unless I teach them what some of the tactical terms of Marine jargon is, they're going to be lost. They don't know what the hell it is. If I make them memorize those terms up front, they at least know when they hear the platoon commander issuing an order, it's like, okay, I get it. I've never been on a night attack before, but he's issuing an order for a night attack. And what I'm hearing is Corporal Smuckatelli squad is the main effort. If he knows what squad, main effort, platoon commander, BAMSIS, Yasmiak is, he can get it. And so that's one of the takeaways of this is, when I made the decision that I was going to retire from the Marine Corps, I was a voracious military reader. My last 2 years in the Marine Corps, I read nothing, zero of the military stuff. Instead, I devoured the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Inc., Fortune, every business magazine that I could get to learn the op terms and symbols of business started watching CNBC, didn't know what in the hell I was watching, you know? And I bought a couple little dictionaries, just little blue books. I talked about this before, the Smucatelli's Almanac of Business Terms, Smucatelli's Almanac of Finance Terms. And whatever I heard when I didn't know on CNBC, I would go look for it, and now I knew. And so I learned the octerms and symbols of business. And so that's the homework I'm giving transitioning vets, is you can do all of that before you step out of uniform. You can be so far ahead of yourself. But if you don't know the octerms and symbols, and you think you're just going to land out there and say, hey, I'm Corporal Schmatz, 2 good conduct medals and a NAM, and look at me, and Mike Etor says I can lead and all that, it's not going to work for you. You have to go out there and sell yourself, and the best way to do that is to show them, like, wow, I know this guy's never been in business, but he's talking to me like he understands what my company does. I like this kid. I'm going to hire him. And I like him. He's got energy. I know he's a Marine, so I know he's not a bumper. He's used to being on time. We need a little bit of that around here. And I didn't hear a single military term come out of his mouth. No Roger that, you know, check or anything like that. He came in wearing, you know, nice clothes, not poor friends, and you know, he wasn't festooned with all sorts of military pins on his, you know, too small or too large suit jacket and all of that, you know. So I know we're now a dangerous company because I'm starting to give fashion tips. So you better regain control of this pretty quick.
No, it's going where I want it to go, to be honest with you. Let's talk about something. So I want to talk about, so what translates, right? And to that, I want to go, again, back to very basic definitions. So when we think about military leadership, okay, if I close my eyes, I see a spectrum of, and I'm going to tell you a funny story here. I see a spectrum of, on one hand, the British kind of Royal Marine way of this Iron Corporal walking up and, you know, in very quiet terms saying, blah, 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 do this now, and something happening. And then on the other side of the spectrum, I have, you know, we'll use the character of the Marine drill instructor, right? So there's this spectrum of this quiet, measured, and it could be from any branch of the service or any country, experienced person walking up in very, you know, low voice, hey, do this now, blah, blah, blah. And then you have the other part, the other end of the spectrum. So when we talk about what it is to lead, Mike, what are we talking about?
Yeah, good question. The spectrum of leadership that you just described, I would say you just talked about squad leader through, you know, company grade, staff sergeant, gunny, company level leadership, which is usually what I call line of sight leadership. You know, usually a platoon commander can see all of his people, and company commander not so much, but you get my point.
Right.
And then you've got the field grades that are more removed, and they're dealing with stuff that the company grade officers and staff NCOs and Lance Coolies don't even know exists. And it all works, you know. And the battalion commander, because he's surrounded with good staff officers and staff NCOs and all of that, he doesn't have to, you know, yell and scream, even though we've got some scrapers. He doesn't have to yell and scream. His job is to be the conductor of the symphony, so to speak. But I can assure you, before that symphony starts, there are people that are in charge of the brass section that are making damn sure that everybody's got their equipment cleaned and ready to go. Now I'm probably talking about a high school band versus a professional band, but you get my point,
yep.
You know? So hopefully I've answered your question on that. Out here, it's the same way. You have, depends on the environment, construction, manufacturing. You've got every bit the S and Vance's squad leader, platoon sergeant, company gunny, you know, shipping dock foreman, construction site foreman, leader, a department head, all the way up to the executive that is stepping back and looking at the production and the profit and loss statement of his 14 offices that he oversees in his region. Now, he's got captains and majors, so to speak, running each one of those sites. Each one of those has staff NCOs and junior officers and NCOs. Whether they realize it or not, they do have them. But he's a little bit more removed. So he's in the battalion headquarters, listening to the radios, but he's also thinking about future ops as well. So the analogy of platoon, squad, platoon, company, battalion, regiment, division, the analogy of where the leader's eyes are, front line, all the way over the horizon, into the next generation of equipment and manufacturing processes and all that. It's a one-for-one fit with the military world.
Okay. The story I was going to tell you was a story one of my Marines told me recently. And he said, hey, sir, do you remember when he said you were a second lieutenant and you were our platoon commander, third platoon, Charlie Company 1-5. We were doing a CACS and we were assaulting a strong point, but the machine guns didn't shift fire. So as we closed in on it, right, they hadn't shifted yet, and we all went to ground. And you had just got off the radio, right, screaming at them to cease shift fire. And I said, well, I remember the event, but that's about it. He said, do you remember, he said, I was one of the squad leaders. We were looking at you, and you just smiled and winked at us. And I said, I don't remember that. And he said, no, I've never forgotten that. And I said, why? Why? Maybe it was a twitch. Are you sure it was a wink? He said, no, you smiled. And then you said, get ready, boys. And I said, no. He said, I've never forgotten that. That made such a huge impression on me about being calm. And I said, well, yeah, let me just so you know, I was faking that shit. And he started laughing. He said, well, it had a huge impact on me. And so I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the difference between being a leader as opposed to being somebody who's in charge. I want to talk about somebody who's what I'll call a loving leader, and I'm going to play a piece of audio here in a second, as opposed to somebody who's an exploitive leader. And I want to offer as evidence Jay and Mattis here. I'm going to play a little bit of audio, so stand by.
If you don't love your Marine, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that low-paying outfit 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marine. And the infantry got its name, infant soldier, infantry, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda any time you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, CFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
So talk to me about that concept, Mike, because I think it's a huge concept in the military. And to me, if you don't understand that, then I think you didn't take away from the intensity of the experience that which you should have taken away, and you're probably going to struggle as a leader in the civilian world.
Yeah, I agree entirely. You and I were in the Marine Corps before man hubs got fashionable, you know. I mean, back in my day, in the 70s, if you did like the bro hug, the man hug that go on today, I mean, you very quickly would have had to go see the chaplain, and you'd probably be on your way out pretty quickly, you know?
Right.
You're suspect. But, so my point is, there wasn't a whole lot of mention of the word love during my years in the Marine Corps in the 70s and 80s. Now, that said, it was readily apparent to all which leaders were absolutely working in our best interests and had our best interests at heart in everything that they did for us, to us, made us do, stopped us from doing, etc. And General Mattis is absolutely right. And I've said this example before. And anyone that's gone through enlisted boot camp, or not anybody, but most people that have gone through enlisted boot camp will hear this and they will agree with it. You get a recruit that's been on the depot 10 or 15 days max. He's in the second week of training with his platoon. And after 2 weeks, you take him aside and show him a picture of his 3 or 4 drill instructor team and say, all right, recruit, I want you to rank these guys 1 through 4 relative to their experience as a drill instructor. Not as a Marine. Tell me which guy has been a drill instructor longest and if you have anybody that's fairly new. And they will be able to pretty much nail it every time. So the recruit doesn't know what the hell he's doing, but he knows to recognize, hey, this guy is not as self-assured, he's not as good a close sort of drill as the others. He must be a new drill instructor, even though he's got 3 rows of ribs. He's obviously a new drill instructor, which most new drill instructors are loath to admit to recruits. You know, they don't want to admit any weakness, but it's pretty apparent to even the youngest recruit. Now, most enlisted guys are out there saying, no, he's exactly right. I could tell. You know, this guy didn't know what he was doing and he marched us wrong or whatever. Well, how I apply that in the business world is most civilians have received no leadership training, so they don't know what to look for in their leaders. But as human beings, they can tell if someone is being genuine and sincere with them and has their best interests at heart. And just like General Mattis says, if your people in your accounts payable department, tech department, you know, auto mechanic section or whatever, if they don't know in their heart that your heart is aimed at them and benefiting them and their families and careers, you will never get the maximum loyalty and productivity out of them. You will never get it, nor do you deserve it. So, again, to pump up the military guys coming out, you're so used to seeing this in the Marine Corps. You're so used to doing it if you're a leader, a genuine concern for your peer, your fellow, your subordinate. And if you display this kind of love and affection in the right way, love, affection, genuine support, mentorship, if you do this on the outside in the civilian world, you're going to be recognized as a leader pretty quickly. And what I tell people is, if you are a leader, a bona fide Marine leader, and you come out here, it's almost impossible for you to suppress your learned leadership instincts and methodologies. I mean, you just, I'm struggling for the analogy. You know, it's like taking a trained hunting dog to the field and telling them, no, don't chase birds today. Don't chase the pheasant. So I'm telling you, I've heard Marines tell me to my face, usually it's with senior officers, but now I'm just going to chill out. I'm like, you know what? 8 to 4, I'm in a high stress career. I'm going to go give somebody a good day's wage, but I'm not doing it. And within weeks, they say, man, this place is in trouble. I can make this. And within weeks, they are leading. And within weeks or months, the organization or their team, the department is deferring to them. Despite the fact that they don't have a title, they're deferring to them. And then good things start happening to them. Because out here, you can go from major to major general in 18 months or 3 years or whatever. And that's impossible in the military. So I tell the story often of a Lance Corporal we took a chance on. He was a comm Marine, air wing comm, did a tour early Afghanistan. Might have been with General Mattis when they first went in. Came to K-Force, no degree. We saw something on him. I didn't. One of the guys that worked for me did. He was a Marine. And so I said, yeah, hire him. And I'm going to, the bottom line up front, That guy's an executive today. I would say his compensation is no less than $300,000 a year. And he's not at K-Force anymore, but while at K-Force, I watched him for over a decade develop incredibly quickly. And because we were feeding him responsibility, and he knew it, and he became a student of the art. And I got to tell you, I mean, that guy could lead. He never led in the Marine Corps. He might have been, like, in charge of a comm section or something. You know, I'm not conversant with their fire teams and squad terminology and all that, but he was never more than a squad leader at that. And I don't say that in a divisive manner.
Right.
But get up here, and I got to tell you, I mean, he was a better leader in the business world than a lot of military, including Marines, that were actually staff NCOs or commissioned officers. Some of them played senior. This guy was better than that because he had that leadership attitude, and he learned, and the bottom line is he could make it happen. People wanted to work. It was fun working for him. And it was really fun for me sitting in executive meetings, watching him come in after a few years, and he's now briefing the general officers of this company and kicking ass. And I'm thinking, this is a Lance Corporal 5 years ago. And this is a corporal when he got out. I mean, there are people that say this can't happen, and we're making it happen. He made it happen. All we did was give him the opportunity and the tool. And so the good news is there's a ton of companies out there willing to do that. There's also a ton not willing to do that. So like anything else, Matt, when I'm telling the Marines and people in any service, if you're in for one or two enlistments, your outlook on the Marine Corps is almost entirely related to the leadership that you worked for. If you got in a bad unit, bad staff NCOs, tyrant NCOs, weak officers, you're not that big of a fan on your experience. And it's the same in the business world, you know? It's the absolute same in the business world. So it's a matter of luck. And so what I tell people out here is, hey, be someone's great boss. Like one of my first officers was a guy named Jim Battellini. He was my lieutenant. We used to go to the weight room together. He's a big, strong guy, and I used to spot him and all of that. And he's the one that talked me into considering going to college and all that. Well, you know, 10 to 12 years later, he's the best man at my wedding. Then he's my battalion commander when I'm a company commander. So I always tell people, you know, as a lieutenant, I tried to be someone's Jim Battellini. And that's what I try to tell people is, in the Marine Corps, you had Jim Battellini and Ross Carter, you know, the gunny that spent so much time with me. You guys all have those mentors, and be somebody like that out here. When you come out in the business world, find some business mentors, and then at some point, you become one. My message when I teach business leaders are, I always trick them and say, you know, basically, tell me who your Battellinis are. You know, they say, oh, yeah, I worked for this guy. Thank God he set me straight, my first job right out of college. And then I ask them, do you think that there's anyone in your frag pattern, in your lineage, your DNA tree, that feels the same way about you? And usually they're hesitant to answer that because they're not sure, and that causes them to reflect, my Jesus, did I take as much time being a mentor to people that this guy took to me? And I always tell them, look, what's done is done, but you have a lot of life ahead of you, and so start doing it now. And I obviously offer them ways, and here's how you can do this, here's how you can establish a culture of mentorship and, you know, learning and things like that. So a little bit of a long, protracted answer, but again, I keep repeating, the analogies are one for one. If you're a transitioning Marine veteran of any service for any length of time, you've got so much marketable skills out here. You have to learn the op terms and symbols, and you cannot walk out here with a sense of entitlement nor a sense of superiority. Because let me give you one thing, and I'll turn it back to you, Matt. I have seen Marines fail out here. I've seen eminently qualified Marines fail. I know of he wasn't a general, but he was a high-ranking Marine officer. Unbelievable IQ. Professional creds in the Marine Corps out the yin-yang. And I am aware of this guy failing because he could not be a squad leader in a very low-paced business environment. Could not, I'm telling you. And I was shocked to hear that. I knew the guy. And the last thing I would have ever suspected is that he would be incapable of leading a squad of civilians in an occupation in the business world that absolutely aligned a technical MOS in the Marine Corps. And he was in the same technical MOS, so to speak, in the business world, and he failed miserably at multiple companies. And so now I've got a guy that's a retired Marine field grade officer leader that gets out here and can't lead. And trust me, nobody was more surprised than him. And I'm using that. I'm anonymizing it, obviously. It could be a female. It could be some other MOS. But seeing people fail, I've seen special ops guys come out and absolutely crater. And I've seen non-sexy Moto T guys come out and light it up. Just light it up. So I've seen some guys with mediocre non-meeting type resumes in the military come out and be champions out here. And then I've seen some guys that were absolute, the guys I want to send my son to combat with in the Marine Corps, come out and not be able to adapt, or surprisingly, in some cases, freeze. I mean, freeze under business combat. And so, I tell people there's a big world waiting out here for you. You should be encouraging all that. Please don't be overconfident and don't get confident, not cocky, because you will get smashed.
So what's the seminal lesson, given that we've gone under this? Is the seminal lesson Mattis's lesson that if in this intensity, if you take away the screaming and yelling from this, that's military leadership, right? You're gonna, in my opinion, you're gonna fail. If you take away that this is more about love and caring about people and enabling people and creating conditions that enable people to get stuff done, which are all the things you did on a daily basis, the screaming and yelling was a very small part of it. If you take away that lesson from it, then to me, you've embraced, in my opinion, the most important part of that which you went through. Is that too simplified? Because to me, Mattis's lesson is the seminal lesson of you have gone through this intense leadership academy where the stakes are very high, and whether we're training, you know, aviation operations on a daily basis, right? You risk your life. It's real world, right?
Yeah.
Right? Anytime you're putting boats in the water, real world. Anytime you're doing live fire, real world, you know, downside to all of that. So to me, in all of that, if what you take away from your military leadership experience isn't the love that it takes to give more of yourself, to try harder, to create the environment, to listen more, to impact their lives and make them greater, if you miss that point, in my opinion, you missed the boat, because that's the intensity of the experience, and that's what, in my opinion, that's what translates, and where you're so much better off, in that you've learned how to care about people in a way that most leaders in the country haven't learned yet. Your thoughts?
Yes, exactly. Yes, what they've learned. The genuine concern, you know, the love for their people, taking care of them, making sure the deer squared away, making sure they bring the rain gear out to the field and all of that, you know. They've learned that, first of all, by having it done to them when they're a snuffy. And then when they're a fire team leader or, you know, in some kind of position of authority, they end up doing it and all of that. If they come out here in the business world, they're going to be fine. They're going to need to learn things, but they're going to be fine, because I'm just telling you. The people that are successful in the business world over the long haul are the people that master those very skills you just talked about. And I know there's going to be corporals and captains and gunnies sitting there saying it can't be that. Mike just told me not to be cocky and overconfident. It can't be that easy. And what I'm telling you is, fellas, it don't get cocky. Don't get overconfident. That's something that you absolutely take for granted. looking out for the welfare and well-being and working conditions and all of that of your fire team, squad, company, battalion, whatever, you take that for granted because it's institutionalized where you are. It's embedded in your DNA, the culture of the institution. If you come out here, that's very rare. And the rare guys that do that, you know, the guys and gals that do that and display it out of here in the business world, those are your fast movers. Those are the people that when they leave a company and move across the country to, from, you know, Los Angeles to New York City and go to another company, those are the leaders that people will follow them. They will follow them from Los Angeles to their new company. And those are the successful people. I see a lot of people in the business world fail, and they, Matt, listen to me, they never fail because they're not smart enough. They never fail because they don't have the technical expertise. They fail for the same reasons small unit leaders fail. They lose touch or never get in touch with their people. They don't learn how to eat last. And so I want people to come out assured and confident that some of the things they take for granted are not out here because it simply hasn't been taught. So they have this unfair advantage coming out in the business world. Now that said, they've got to learn the out terms and symbols, and they've got to get on the learning train no different than if all of a sudden you're going on a deployment and 3 weeks before the deployment to a combat zone, you get 10 civilians. And I tell you, these guys didn't even go to boot camp. And you're taking them. And guess what? They're going on patrols with you. And so if you're listening to this thing, oh, my God, what the hell would I have to do, you know? Well, guess what, folks? When you come out to the business world, it is combat. It's one of the big differences between Marine Corps and military and the business world, and it explains why there's so little time for training, because they don't have that 16 or 17 years to prepare a guy like Mattis for his first combat. You're in combat every day, profit and loss. And so the rounds are going downrange and coming back at you, so to speak, in the sales reports and the economy and what's the Congress doing and all of that. And so in some ways, there's a level of stress and a pace out here that greatly exceeds anything that you're doing in the Marine Corps short of combat operations or being on quota in Marine recruiting. Those are too high stress, you know, those are too high paced. If you blow this, you're going to die. And if you blow it on recruiting, you'll wish you had died because your career is over, you know. Out here, they're in combat every day. My hat's off to them. I mean, that's why I learned that pretty quickly out here is business guys are under fire every day. And the guys that survive to lead companies and do well and all of that, just think if we put a civilian in charge of a platoon and he conducted a night raid, captured Saddam Hussein, killed 5 guys with his bare hands, degraded him, would we give that guy a medal or not and be in absolute wonderment about how he did that as an untrained civilian? But that's how I look at some of the business leaders. Despite their lack of training, despite not knowing what the Lance Corporal at 5 years in knows when he EASs, this guy has showed leadership aptitude, and he's risen to the top. And I'm telling you, in almost every case, it's because they've got what Mattis talks about, love for Marines and all that. They love for people. They manage to get people to put out 100% for them every single day.
You know, Mike and I, again, we live similar lives. I find it very interesting, because I would tell you the same thing that Mike's just told you for the last hour, is that I believe whether it's in business or in life, and most of the speaking I do is about trauma and living a great life after trauma darkens your doorstep. I believe veterans can change the country. And there's no doubt in my mind about that. I believe that veterans, they live a little bit different life. They experience sometimes trauma as a result of military service, oftentimes not. But I think that the skills coming out of it aren't a liability, right? I mean, some people look at it like that, but I don't. And I believe, like Mike believes, right, veterans have so much to offer the business world. And I will tell you that when I talk about traumatic things, veterans can be an absolute game changer in the way the nation looks at life after trauma. And we can do that. And so, Mike, first of all, for the first installment, from Emory Upton to Jim Mattis to the upside of what essentially military leadership in that intense crucible, what essentially you have to learn and what you can do with it, I find it pretty inspirational. And what haven't I asked, been smart enough to ask you on this very, very basic topic of what is military leadership? What is the experience? You know, given that intensity, what should you take away from it? Is there anything that I haven't been smart enough to ask you that you want to make sure that you say in this?
No, I think we've covered it, but, you know, an off-the-cuff summary, Matt, is I'm talking to the folks, the guy and gal that's about to get out or has gotten out or is on their first job is, you know, you again, you've learned more than you believe you have. You know more than you think you do when it comes to leadership and organizing things. And I would encourage you to learn the op terms and symbols of your environment and slowly but surely exert some of those leadership and organizational skills. And don't set low standards for yourself. Don't set low goals. Set high goals. I'm telling you that there is an absolute shortage, a desperate need for good leaders out here in the business world, even in companies that don't realize that they need good leaders. So I'm encouraging you folks. And again, there's nothing wrong with deciding to get out and say, hey, I want to work in the lumberyard, drive a forklift, and that's the extent of the leadership responsibilities. I don't want to be responsible for anybody anymore. Or I want to work in a cubicle, and I want to be an accountant, and I want to look at the same stuff every day. I'm not knocking that. If you want to do that, that's honorable. There's nothing wrong with that. It's no different than a Marine with a college degree, and they ask him if he wants to go to OCS. He says, no, I don't want to be an officer. I'm happy being a Lance Corporal. I'm just doing one tour. I'm out. Or I'm happy being a staff NCO. I've got a master's degree. I don't want to be a warrant officer or an LDO or an officer. I want to be a master sergeant. The Marine Corps needs good master sergeants. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Obviously, most of my emphasis is trying to shine the light on people to say, hey, out here, unlike in the Marine Corps, out here you can go from Lance Corporal to Major pretty quickly, and from Major to Major General pretty quickly. And if you have a feeling that you want to lead and you have an aptitude for lead and you'll be a student of leadership and align it with the business world, the sky is the limit. I mean, the future is so bright for you. If you're willing to work, and make no doubt about it, becoming a senior leader out here requires the same amount. Becoming a good one and one that survives. And these guys that run major companies, Jamie Dimon and people like that, these guys absolutely have put in as much work studying their craft and leadership as did General Mattis, Dunford, and anybody else that's achieved high things in the military. These guys have done it, been there, done that, paid the price to rise to the pinnacle of their profession. And so, you know, one time, I'll close it with this, you know, out here, I don't want to focus everybody on money. Now, that said, I wish in the Marine Corps that they had the ability to pay the really shit hot sergeants three times more than the E5s. Because, you know, my detour says there's a big difference between a sergeant and an E5. If people out there don't understand that, I'll explain it in person if they want me to.
Hey, look, Mike, if you don't understand that, don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. And so, obviously, the Marine Corps can't do that. Out here, when it comes to the compensation, all that, it is a meritocracy. If you're working for a company and they know you're making a difference in their bottom line, it's really simple. They're going to pay you so that you're happy and you won't leave and you won't be stolen by another company for just another 5K or 20K or whatever it is. They're going to pay you. Or if they don't pay you, you can start looking around and now you have credibility, you've got a resume, and you say, sweetie, if you're willing to move from St. Louis to Kansas City, I can take this role and we can make another $40,000 a year and it's a good company and blah, blah, blah. What do you think? That meritocracy exists out here. But you have to be a sound leader as applied to the business world. So the only thing you're lacking out here when you walk out the door with your DD-214 in your hand is experience in the business world. Now, that said, much like Mattis had no combat experience when he went to the Gulf. But he studied. I mean, his mind was full of tactics, techniques, history, how to use combined arms and all of that. So shame on any of you if you do the transition and you don't walk out the main gate the last day and say, I'm excited, and I have done as much as possible up to this point to prepare for the symptom. I've read, I've studied, I know what these terms are. I know what the stock market means. I know what the economy means. I know what most domestic product means. I've learned this stuff. If you're the kind of guy that says, I'll learn it when I'm out there, that means you're going to be working in the lumberyard instead of running the lumberyard. And just like in the Marine Corps, where we got guys that don't achieve much and they bitch at those that do and they're jealous and all of that, same stuff goes on here. So I'm approaching it that everybody out there that comes out, if you want to be a leader, then why wouldn't you want to do good? Especially when you can get paid a lot for doing really well. But listen, the good news is the civilians will pay you a lot if you're worth it. The bad news is you got to be worth it, folks. And how you get to be worth it is to produce bottom line results. High retention of employees, high morale of employees, good profit and loss statements, good safety statistics. Doesn't this sound familiar? Did we get safety brief and all of that? Again, the Marine Corps analogy of small unit leadership absolutely applies. And for you senior leaders out there, the Marine Corps analogy of field grade leadership, general officer leadership, absolutely applies in the business world. However, you may have to take a demotion, so to speak. In other words, I tell colonels, you got to be willing to get a toehold in a company, maybe at the major level. You'll get in, you'll prosper, they'll recognize you very quickly, and you'll be back to the colonel or BG or major general before you know it, you know? But it's two different populations, the young folks and then the older guys. The older guys are the ones that I see that usually, whether it's enlisted or officer, have more of a sense of entitlement. And that's a separate talk. That's a separate session and all of that. But I want to leave everybody on a high note. I'm an upbeat person. I've seen it. I've had it happen. I've done it. I've helped people do it. The world is your oyster. It's just waiting for you to pluck it out here. And to Matt's point with the post-traumatic winning, listen, I've seen guys come out here that lost their legs, they've lost the limbs. And they, look at Tim Maxwell, you know, he's got metal shrapnel still in his brain. And what's he doing? Instead of just being a disabled veteran, he's up there, he's building a farm, like a retreat for veterans to help them out. So I've seen guys that their bodies are wrecked and come out here and start businesses, become part of businesses, do really well. So what's your excuse? That's what I always tell people is, what's your excuse? And that's why I apply that to myself. I'm 63 years old. I physically haven't changed a bit since I'm 23. I was just looking at myself, Matt, in the shower there. Like, Mike, you're still cutting like carbon steel. Look at you, you know? So obviously I jest, but the bottom line is I'm 63. I have my mind. I've got energy. I've got my health. Who says I can't do whatever I want to do? So if you take that kind of optimism and enthusiasm and transplant it in the 23-year-old Lance Corporal, I have no sympathy for you. Get out there, get it, go snatch it. And meet on a hook waiting for you.
Mike Etor. The book is called Trust-Based Leadership, Marine Corps Leadership Concepts for Today's Business Leaders. This is episode one of a series that we'll do with Mike about the book, which, again, I hope that what you take away from this is an understanding of the intense leadership training that you've been exposed to as a veteran. And that intensity and the stakes, whether we're training, whether we're operating in a real contingency, the stakes are the same. And you reap certain benefits of that, and you've got to understand what those benefits are and how the civilian sector is in desperate need of them. And then hopefully between that and Mike's inspirational words, you'll get out there and you'll get out there and do it. So, Mike, thanks for doing it. I love talking leadership and love talking leadership with you. So, thank you very much.
Mac, I have one request. Could you, a statement and then a request. The book itself, relative to the transitioning servicemen, when you read it, and I'm encouraging you to read it, you'll say, man, I know this stuff. And Mike is saying that he uses this book as course material to teach civilians. I know this stuff. And this book is a very good read to help you understand just how much you know. And then there are business examples in it, and then there's articles that I've written in about how I literally applied Marine Corps leadership in the business world. So it can be a huge confidence builder for you. I think Amazon will let you buy it and return it like 60 or 90 days later if you think it's trash or whatever. But I encourage you to read the book. It's what I use to train business executives and people, you know, that are going to be leaders in the business world. But for a transitioning guy, it's an excellent reminder, I did learn all of this stuff. And I guarantee you'll be able to pick up some phrases and some things to say during interviews. And to that end, Mac, I request that somewhere on your website you post a link to the Amazon page, because that'll be the inevitable question is, Mike, where can I get the book? And we've already given away a good number of the free copies, so I'm not doing it anymore. We got enough other soliciting reviews and all of that. We've given out a ton of them already, so I've had to withdraw that offer. But it's money well spent. If you don't think it is and you get the book, send it back to Amazon. It's no skin off of me, but I think you're going to take this book. You're going to learn a lot from it, and more importantly, when you get in the business, you'll be able to use this as the basis for teaching your people how to lead as well.
The link to buy the book is included in the podcast. So all you got to do is just click on the podcast. When it comes up, you'll see the link if you want to go to the Amazon page that where you can purchase it. It is in the podcast. So there you go.
Thank you, Mac. I just looked at the clock. It's like, man, we've got almost an hour and a half. My computer screen's got all sorts of spin on it. I'm ready to go. I just got done PCing. I'm going to go back and do some lap pulls right now. I'm just fired up. I just love talking about leadership. Love talking about leadership to veterans. Had such a great experience when I transitioned out. And I've seen so many other people have great experiences. I'm begging you guys that are newly out or about to get out or going to be out someday, you should be so fired up. And relative to Matt, if you've gone through some trouble, going through some tough times, cheer up. Get through it, because the sun is always rising the next day. And there's a whole new world out here waiting for you. And to Matt's earlier point, veterans can absolutely be one of the major cures for many of the diseases plaguing our great nation today. We need leadership, and you folks know leadership. So with that, Matt, go bang some iron right now.
All right. Mike, have a good day. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Bye-bye.
There you have it. Mike Etor. Going to go do some lat pull-downs. No, it's just interesting. We live on a parallel life track, Mike and I. And he in promoting what people do in the world of business and post-traumatic winning, obviously, in the realm of traumatic experiences. But I think he and I both see veterans as unique agents of change. So so it's pretty interesting to compare notes and talk to Mike. And as you can tell, he's an enthusiastic guy who believes in the Marine way and the Marine experience. So pretty cool. As the music indicates, that'll do it on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. Thanks for listening. If you're just tuning in, I would encourage you not to touch that dial. The first hour, pretty good today. And the theme of the first hour is this. You're surprised by the misrepresentations in the Afghanistan papers? Come on, man. Ever hear of the Pentagon Papers? Are you familiar with General Frank's failures relative to Phase 4 in either Iraq or Afghanistan? Do you understand what Don Rumsfeld did? Attempted to write the world according to Don Rumsfeld and found out that, yeah, it doesn't work like that? So, I think I'm surprised that people are surprised. So, you'll hear that. So, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on a Wednesday. We are over and out.